Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Greg Priddy.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
I'm good. And so the first thing you said to me, are we going to talk about the Olympics? What do you think I'm going to talk about? Are you watching the Olympics?
Hell no.
Oh. Well, you know, the U.S. is actually performing quite well in some areas.
I did watch the live coverage of the men's road race on Saturday morning, whenever it was. That was interesting.
Well, Kristen Armstrong rode to Olympic gold for a time trial, and she came back from some, well, first of all, she came back from having a baby and then broken this and broken that. So she did really, really well. You know, some of our swimmers are breaking world records, too. And not just the guys, the girls. A whole crop of new people are kind of up there. I like
it. Some of the American swimmers are getting their asses kicked, too.
Well, that, too. Well, you know, what can I tell you? The Olympics are a big deal, capital B. Well, it's important. I think it's important. I know you don't really care. One of the events I'm interested in is the triathlon. So women's was this morning, but I do not know the results because I was out, off doing other things like working. And we have a new puppy. Tell me about life. Woo! And then the men's is coming up on Tuesday.
Certain Olympic sports I really can get into. Triathlon is one because they're not salted with pros.
Right. That's correct.
Yeah. So,
who knows who's going to win?
Olympic basketball? Why?
Well, and, once they allowed pro. Now, I will totally agree with you that when I was growing up, Olympics were amateur athletes.
Yeah. Didn't Jim Thorpe, get his medals taken away because he got a nickel for running
Something.
A race at some point in
Something.
Time?
Yeah.
And now, LeBron James is playing as an Olympic athlete. In what world does that make sense?
Somebody's world.
Somebody's.
You
not
know
mine.
What? I think
not
it's
mine.
In. I think it's in the column called "Follow the Money."
I guess. Or
I don't know.
Everybody else was doing it, so we did it too.
I guess so. Well, the little girlies won the gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
Gold. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. Anyway, so we're talking about triathlon, and the granddaddy of triathlon is the Ironman.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight we're going to talk with a journalist who not only is an Ironman, but he writes for Lava Magazine, which is the triathlon magazine. Beautiful magazine. If you've never seen it, Lava is pretty to look at. I like shiny, pretty magazines. And this one's beautifully written and has beautiful photographs and evidently lots of good stuff, including Ryan Schneider's column. So I met Ryan at press camp on the way out of Park City. We rode the same shuttle back to the airport, and that was the first time I met him, which is really funny because we got along instantly. He cracked me up. Ryan fell in love with the sport of triathlon, just like other athletes do, because they're a little crazy, But he's a journalist by trade, still works in marketing and brand development for the gaming industry. So he has a couple of jobs here. He's a triathlete. He works in marketing. He writes for Lava Magazine. And he started doing a few other things for Lava Magazine. And he decided he had to go to work for them. He fell in love with the magazine when he saw it. So his column is called Mind Games. And his newest column is hilarious. You should read it. And that actually, there's some seriousness to it. So I promised him we'd talk. Tonight's the night. So Ryan Schneider will be with us shortly. Our other guest this evening has been on the show before. Bike lawyer Steve Magus. Steve was on the show about a year ago talking about his research into cycling fatalities here in Ohio. And tonight we're going to see what's trending, how Ohio fares among the states, and why these bicycle crashes aren't always well documented by authorities, which I thought was an interesting part of his work. So let's welcome writer, triathlete, and gaming expert Ryan Schneider to the Outspoken Cyclist. Ryan, thanks for joining us this evening.
It is great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, when we met at press camp, which was on our way to the airport. So we were there in Park City for like 3 days and never even met each other. That is so weird.
Well, it was just such an explosive show in terms of, you know, it was so busy the entire time, so packed with activities that I'm not surprised.
No, me neither. But it was good that we finally caught up with one another in the shuttle on the way to the airport.
That was a crazy shuttle ride. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was. Let's fill us in a little bit on your background and how you came to Lava Magazine, because I thought it was an awesome story. It made me really laugh.
Well, you know, I really love the sport of triathlon. It just speaks to me on a deep level, and the fact that, you know, I like the sport speaks to me because, for me, I feel like I need something that constantly keeps me engaged. So the idea of swimming and then going, ooh, look at the shiny new biking toy, and then running to that, and then saying, ooh, now I want to go run for a while. Like, I love that. And when Lava Magazine came out, I just thought it was a beautiful magazine. I thought it was beautiful to look at. I liked the copy, and it sparked in me a desire to want to contribute for the magazine, even for free. So I contacted them proactively, asked if they wanted any help. They gave me a shot. I wrote for free. They liked what I was doing, and I proposed a column, and they accepted it, and I've been writing for them pretty much ever since. It's been more than a year and a half now that I've been a contributor there.
Yeah, I sort of went back through some of the archives. I like the name of your column, too, and we'll get to that in a second. So you call yourself the Iron Madman. Now, were you an Ironman triathlete before you wrote for Lava?
Yes. Yes, I was. And where that term came from was a couple places, actually. One, I wanted to write a blog post chronicling every single day of my training for my first Ironman. I thought that would be valuable for my own sanity, and I wanted to offer a blueprint to my future children one day that I don't have yet. I wanted to show them this is how you attack a big goal in life. Like, it's literally one day at a time. And I was just a huge fan of Mad Men, the show, and I found a way to combine both of them into something a little kitschy and fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, as soon as I saw it, I went, I got it. You know, it was obvious, but it's an interesting blog. It illustrates your writing well, and it's a big undertaking. Are you still contributing to that ongoingly? I know you've now done 4 Ironman triathlons, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, three.
Three fulls, 3 halves, and a bunch of Olympics and sprints. You know, I really haven't blogged as much as I would like lately. I've been, now that my role expanded with Lava in terms of product reviews, race reports, and the monthly column, not to mention my day job, which I'm sure we'll chat about.
We will.
It's been hard to fit everything in, but my heart is in blogging, and I just need to devote more time to it, hopefully in that 25th hour in the day. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, if you want something done, give it to someone who's busy.
Exactly. That is so true. So I want to quote you on something, and then we're going to expand on that a little bit. Because I think it's an interesting concept. You said that everyone is capable of completing an Ironman, each in their own way. Ironman is a metaphor for picking a massive personal goal, pursuing it passionately, appreciating the journey along the way, and celebrating the accomplishment once it's been achieved. Do you remember writing it?
I do.
Oh, good.
I believe it in my bones that that is true. Everybody is capable of an Ironman, and whatever an Ironman really is a metaphor. It can be tackling a marathon. It can be coordinating a charity drive. It could be doing something unheard of at work and spectacular. That is a massive undertaking. It's just about setting a goal, picking a plan, devoting yourself to that plan, really throwing yourself into it. And when you achieve that great success, you know, I think it's also very important to bask in that moment for a little bit before moving on to the next thing. There are so many type A's that are either cyclists or triathletes that we're so busy focusing on the next thing that we forget to remember celebrating the moment.
So have there been other Ironman moments and events in your life besides the actual triathlons?
I would say none quite as important to me as the first Ironman. And the reason why is, I had pursued other sports and other endeavors in life, and I hadn't taken them to their full conclusion or their limit. One example is I'd studied martial arts for a number of years, and I never pursued it enough to earn my black belt in the system I was studying, and it's something I always regretted. And I started to doubt myself in terms of, do I have what it takes to finish what I start? The blog was a good motivational tool for me to make sure that I committed to something, and I stuck with it, and I owned it. So from that moment forward, there isn't anything that I feel like I can't do now, that as long as I put my mind to it and set a plan and work diligently towards it every day. So it was a very momentous experience in my life.
Awesome. I actually directed a half Ironman for 3 years.
I remember you saying that in the shuttle. That's
yeah,
right.
And it was many, many years ago when triathlon really had just come on the scene. We did a swim bike run with two separate transition areas. What an amazing event it was. 300 volunteers. So I understand when you set your mind to something mammoth, you know, you can make it happen. You can make anything happen.
It's true. And you know, the other side of it for me was I physically never thought I could do this. Like, I have asthma, I got flat feet, I got scoliosis, I got one leg that's significantly longer than the other. Like, I'm a total freak show. And it didn't matter. Like, I wanted to prove to myself that none of that mattered, and if you want something bad enough, you can go out and get it, no matter what. And as my folks would probably tell you and some of my closest friends, like, once I did that event, like, my self-confidence went through the roof. There isn't any – it's more of a quiet self-assuredness now that there isn't anything out there that I don't feel like I can overcome. And I think that that's going to suit me well for the rest of my life. And I think, you know, just touching back on race directing, I mean, I think that is a massive undertaking, like you're saying. And I think those folks don't get enough credit for what they do. Everybody's so focused on just picking up their packet and staying in the race zone, but y'all do a lot of hard work.
Yeah, we did, and we do, and I have to give race directors a lot of credit. So let's move on to Lava Magazine. It is a beautiful publication, by the way, and I certainly understand what was compelling visually. And how about content-wise? What about the publication compelled you to take your day job and add to it another full-time job, practically?
Well, a couple things. I mean, first and foremost, it really was the physical look of the magazine that intrigued me at first. It's so elegant, and it brought a certain level of just graceful beauty to the sport that I found intriguing. And then inside, I really liked the in-depth articles on the athletes. I liked that it wasn't just your general tips and tricks kind of pieces, but there was a lot of scientific thought brought into the content. And it felt like something big, and that it catered to a sophisticated audience. And as a result, it brought out something in me, having been a journalism major in college, that it rekindled my desire to want to harness the writing I had done for the blog and try to take that to the next level. So it was really, it really just gave me an opportunity to circle back to something that I've always loved to do, which is write. My father's a writer, and I've always loved writing.
So let's take a moment to remind our listeners we're speaking with Ryan Schneider. He is a Renaissance man. He's an Iron Man. He is a journalist. He writes for Lava Magazine. And why don't you tell the listeners what your other job is? Because it has nothing to do with triathlon.
It is about as far away from triathlon as you can possibly get. And in fact, in the office where I work, I'm definitely known as like that freaky nut job guy that goes out and runs a lot of miles and is always biking and swimming. And I work for a video game development studio. We make PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and we just recently launched a game on Facebook called Outernauts. So that is my day job. I'm our director of brand development, which is really just a fancy title for being in charge of marketing and PR and social media outreach, things of that nature, taking care of our studio reputation. And that is something I love. I love where I work, but at the same time, I love triathlon, so I wanted to find a way to do both. And fortunately, I've got a very understanding boss and an even more understanding wife.
You know, this never occurred to me until you just explained the whole thing with the gaming. Has anybody come out with a triathlon game?
There is no triathlon game video game that I know of. There is a cycling video game. Actually, there's more than one that's been on the PC. And I believe it's a Tour de France game. I reviewed a Tour de France console game last year for Lava that I played. I believe I played the PS3 version. It was okay. It gave you this sense of it made you feel like a race director, and it was fun because you had all the Tour de France teams, so you could have at the time Leopard Trek and decide when you were going to send Andy Schleck up Alpe d'Huez and who was going to support for him and when Frank Schleck was going to attack and help Andy out, and that part was pretty cool. So that was where worlds collided for me.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. So let's go back to Lava for a second.
Sure.
You write a column called Mind Games, which is an awesome title for a column, by the way.
Thank you.
And your most recent column was published this week, and it's titled Learning to Suffer. Now, you and I actually had a little side conversation in the shuttle about that particular word, but rather than explain that, explain about learning to suffer as it relates to this column.
Well, sure. Out of all the things you and I both got to see at Bike Press Camp, and there was a lot of great stuff there, stuff I'm still using, in fact, but one item in particular caught my eye, and it wasn't even a product for review. It was a T-shirt, and I believe it was the guy who started Red Kite Prayer, Patrick. It was Patrick's T-shirt, and it said, to suffer is to learn. And that really spoke to me because I was hitting certain plateaus in my training, and it always seemed to come down to, am I working hard enough? Am I not suffering enough? Like, what am I doing? I started to feel like Job after a while. Like, what else can I do here to make some progress? And this column is really just about the journey I had to take to break through some pretty tough mental barriers to achieve a physical milestone that I'd been training for and unsuccessfully for really quite a while. So I was able to talk to Siri Lindley, who is one of triathlon's best-known coaches, as well as Joe Friel, the founder of Training Peaks, really arguably the father of, in some ways, triathlon science and making training a very scientific endeavor with his periodization processes. So it was a great learning experience for me. I really enjoyed writing the piece. And the biggest thing I'm excited about is, since it's been published, I have been overwhelmed with the number of comments and likes and shares. So far, apparently a lot of people are trying to learn how to suffer, too.
Well, the photographs are wonderful.
Yes. Yeah.
The photographs are wonderful.
That credit goes to, that was Jen. Jen helped over at Lava picking those out. I'm just the guy that writes the words.
It draws you to it. You see that one photograph of somebody lying there, and it's like, all right, what's this about? And
yeah.
So, it sucks you right in. So when we met at press camp, you were on assignment for Lava. And you do product reviews,
mm-hmm.
And I was reading some of the product reviews you uploaded to Lava. I want you to tell the story about the Gore jacket, since you're the only one who did it.
Yeah, and it really amazed me that nobody else was up for the opportunity. And I call it an opportunity because where else can you put on rain gear, essentially, and take a shower with your clothes on, and nothing happened. Like, my clothes were completely dry. The Gore product worked absolutely perfectly, and I figure if you're going to review a product, you've got to test it thoroughly, and this was an opportunity to do that.
And so nobody else at press camp, you don't think, did that?
I know nobody else did because...
Oh, okay, because I know I didn't.
Right, and I was told by the Gore folks that I actually won one of the two of them money because the two marketing and product guys bet each other that nobody would take them up on the offer to shower with the Gore-Tex pants and hoodie. So I didn't know there was a bet until after I did it. It never occurred to me not to do it. That's the funny part.
Well, and that is interesting. Now, I happen to, of all of the interviews I did out there and all of the work that I prepared for, including what we're doing now, so I didn't get to do everything right then. I'm still doing stuff going forward from press camp. I didn't get to the Gore room. So I don't know if I would have done it or not. I'm up for that kind of stuff, though. So good for you. I probably would have had I gotten in there. So do you have a favorite product or products that you saw at press camp? It was an interesting array of stuff.
You know, it really was an interesting array. Everything, I really enjoyed everything that I have tried and have continued to experiment with. Right now, I'm riding a pair of Stans No Tubes Alpha 340 tubeless road wheels on my tri bike.
Nice.
And those are great so far. I mean, and I feel I've done everything I can to ruin these tires. Like, I'm actively trying to ride through glass. I'm riding over big potholes to see if these tires will have a catastrophic failure. I mean, I'm putting myself at bodily risk here for this magazine. But you know, so far so good on those wheels. I've really enjoyed. Laser has this helmet now that's got the magneto photochromatic glasses that stick to the helmet straps, and that's pretty cool. That's more like, it's cool. I don't know how useful it is, but it's damn cool. I also really liked the Reynolds 58 aero wheels. I thought that in the wind, especially those surprised me pleasantly there. I'm hopeful in the next few weeks to get my hands on a pair of Envy 6.7 clinchers to try out as well. So, so far so good on the reviews, and I think there's a lot of great product out there.
What is next for you? So now you do the Lava magazine, you still do the gaming stuff, you're a triathlete. Mm-hmm. I think there's something else that's going on with you too. What else is going on?
You know, I don't know. you know, I'm yeah, honestly right. excited. I'm honestly excited about the future. I feel like people are starting to respond to what I have to say in the columns and my writing style, I hope. And I'm just as excited as anybody to see where this goes next. It's really started off as just a passion project for myself and my future family, and it's turning into something that I never expected. So whatever happens, I'm totally open to the journey, and that, I guess that's all there is to say about it. I'm completely baffled by where this has gone and excited about where it could go.
You know, one of the other things that you said, and we didn't explore it, but I do want to mention it right now, is you're doing race review. Is that what you said?
Yeah, just recaps over the weekend, like when if something's going on with ITU or the Challenge Series or Xterra, Vine Man Full recently, then I'm just putting together some summary reports, throwing those up on the website either Sunday or Monday. So, you know, I know sites like Slow Twitch and others are really solid at getting race results up right away. We're just trying a slightly different approach. So far, so good. It just gives me an opportunity to contribute to the magazine more, which I love.
And what do you think about the Olympic triathlon? I think it's Tuesday is the men's try.
Well, gosh, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Brownlees are going to be in full force there, and barring the unforeseen, I don't know how people haven't been beating him at all, and I think that streak is going to continue. It's just sort of like how Bradley Wiggins has been practically unstoppable this season. I think it's the same on the Olympic circuit now.
Well, I'm glad to see triathlon actually in the Olympics. It is an Olympic sport. The word Olympic, you know, just this mammoth undertaking.
Well, and if we're going to have badminton and curling, like, we need triathlon.
Yeah.
Like, all due respect.
I know. I agree.
And the other thing that's great too is, I mean, Canada's flag bearer was Simon Whitfield. So, you know, very famous triathlete. I think the sport just continues to boom and gain massive credibility throughout the world, and that's another exciting thing. I feel like I'm at the at the crest of this wave. I feel like I got in to this sport at the perfect time, like right before it massively took off. I don't know if I showed up to Lava today and said, "Hey, I'd like to write for you guys," I don't know if the same opportunities would be there, because I imagine there's other people who want to do the same thing.
Well, that's an interesting point, because when I produced the Half Ironman here back in the 80s, I thought that triathlon was going to explode then. And it's had this sort of checkered past of, up and down and up and down. And I agree. It seems like cycling in general is getting broad and big on many, many levels. And triathlon is sort of hanging in there and yet still growing. So you are seeing growth in the sport.
Absolutely. And I mean, even on the coach team that I'm on, you know, our coach, the client base has gone from, I don't know, 10, 15 folks just a couple years ago to almost 50. It's just amazing. I mean, it seems like there are new people coming to the team practically every week, certainly every month. I think everybody it's almost like before it was hard to meet somebody that had done a triathlon. Now I think everybody knows somebody that has done one, whether it's through the wonders of Facebook or just, you know, friends experimenting with those things along with some of the Muddy Buddy races or Tough Mudder. And it's just this is the new hot thing to try, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Well, as I knew it would be, this was really fun to talk to you, to catch up, to learn more about Ryan, and to learn about Lava more, too. It's a magazine that was not 100% on my radar and should have been. And I really enjoy your writing, and I really enjoy your just spirit of who you are.
Diane, thank you. That's so kind, and I really appreciate the support and the opportunity to spend time with you.
Well, we'll talk again. We'll see you at press camp next year, probably, for sure.
Oh, I'm staking my claim to that from here on forward. Absolutely.
All right.
Well, I'll just show up with Will Wright for food if I have to.
Yeah. With your little sign.
Yeah, I'll just have to request a couple days off from work to do it.
Hey, they fed us plenty well enough.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That is true.
All right. Well, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk again.
Okay. Thanks so much, Diane.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ryan Schneider joined us from Los Angeles, California.
In the secret gaming room.
He talked to us off air about all the stuff on the walls in the room he was calling from that he couldn't show us or tell us about.
So we said, okay.
What a multifaceted individual.
You should see his CV. He is one bright young man. He was Phi Beta Kappa, magna cum laude, and he's obviously very focused about getting it done. Yeah, yeah. He has a great sense of humor. We just yucked it up on the bus. I'm telling you, we had so much fun.
You know, he talked about suffering, and it is something that is a common thread that runs through not only triathlon, but through all endurance
right.
sports, you know. And it reminds me of the Four Noble Truths from Buddhism.
Yes.
You know, that life is suffering, but suffering is caused by desire.
Right.
And it's often occurred to me while I'm on the bike that you're suffering because you have a desire to be somewhere else than where you are right now. If you can reconcile the fact that I want to be where I am, then...
Because this is where you are.
Right. Then the suffering is somewhat alleviated. So it's interesting.
Yes.
Interesting that he talks about suffering.
It's
like
a very good article. I highly recommend it. And you got to see this photograph. It's excellent.
And the website there is, again...
it's Lava Magazine.
LavaMagazine.com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
And he also has... He has his own website, his own blog. It is Iron Madman. .com. IronMadman.com. Iron Madman.
Oh, so he does. Oh, I have to check this out.
Yeah.
We'll put links to all that on the WJCU website.
Okay.
The posting for this week's show.
He was fun.
Let's take a break.
Okay.
And rumor is it that you have some news.
And you even have some news.
I have a little news that I found out you didn't have, so we'll talk about that.
We're just newsy people.
And then we're going to dive into the law and how it relates to cyclists. All that right after this on The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
On Saturday, September 29th, you can help rock the block by participating in a 5K run, walk, and roll event designed to raise funds and awareness in the fight against housing discrimination. Presented by the nonprofit Housing Research and Advocacy Center, this family-friendly event takes place at Edgewater State Park on a wheelchair-accessible course. Registration and check-in begin at 8 a.m. All participants will receive T-shirts and refreshments, along with awards to top finishers across several age categories. More information on Rock the Block at thehousingcenter.org.
If you're just joining us, I'm Greg Priddy.
And I'm Diane Lees.
And we're back on The Outspoken Cyclist. Time for the news.
It is. And this one is a heartwarming story. instead of a nasty story. It comes from the Cedar Rapids, Iowa Gazette, and it was published before RAGBRAI, but it just came to my attention. So RAGBRAI's over, and I just want to read you some of it. It is so cool. While thousands of bicycle riders across Iowa and the nation have trained and anticipated the start of RAGBRAI for a long time, it's doubtful that anyone is more excited than Clarence Bosenberg. Clarence is 86 years old. This will be his first RAGBRAI. I've always wanted to do it. This is my first chance, says Clarence, a lanky 5'10", 145 pounds. His journey will be both bittersweet and beneficial. For 29 years, Clarence wouldn't leave the side of his wife, Ruby, for more than a couple of days at a time. His wife, since 1949, had had a stroke that paralyzed her right side, and she died last October. The ride will be a family affair. Grandson Eric Doty of Chicago will accompany him on the entire 470-mile trip. They are tent camping along the way. His son Mike of Johnston and grandson Joel Doty of Cedar Rapids will ride part of the way. It just goes on to say how many miles he does and, you know, where he was born and when he started riding a bike. So his first good bike was a Schwinn Varsity 10-speed. He got it at a garage sale for $5. Huh. Right. But anyway, he's so excited. And for the first time at 86, it's better late than never. So he's very excited about doing RAGBRAI. Nicole.
Yeah. Nice.
What's your story, dude?
This comes to us from our friend Wayne Clark down in North Carolina.
Okay.
He posted this link on Facebook this week, and I happened to see it. And actually, it apparently is kind of a big deal. This is from the Sun Sentinel in Broward County, Florida.
Okay.
Triathlete Molly Serrano was issued a ticket for riding outside the bike lane.
Really?
Yeah, I think the laws are a bit different in Florida, apparently. It says that she left the bike lane with a few dozen fellow riders to pass another cyclist, and she got a ticket for it. She appealed the ticket and lost in traffic court.
Huh.
It was an early morning ride where the group said they left the bike lane to pass a slower rider, which is allowed by state law. The woman overtaken by the group testified that Ms. Serrano was indeed telling the truth about that, but the deputy, who was coming from the opposite direction, said he didn't see the cyclist passing anyone, and he gave him a ticket.
I see.
And there...
So it's the deputy's word against all the other cyclists, including the one who was being passed.
Basically. And he was doing 40 miles an hour in the opposite direction in
a
low-light situation.
Anything.
Yeah. On the page where that article was on the Sun Sentinel website, there was another link, and I linked over to that. It said, the headline says, Bike Lane Wars Reach Weston as Deputies Issue Warnings and Tickets to Cyclists.
Interesting.
And the contention is that cyclists are riding too many abreast, taking up the lane of traffic. They're riding outside the bike lane, and they're getting warnings and tickets. Apparently, down there in this area, there is a 51-mile stretch of bike lane that stretches through the lush green terrain, and it's attracting a lot of cyclists, and they're not all apparently behaving the way the deputies think they should. So,
interesting.
Anyway, that's my story.
Interesting story.
SunSentinel.com.
In Broward County, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting. Do we have time for one more story?
Sure, we do.
Did you ever hear of something called greenwashing?
No.
It's interesting. This next tidbit is from a blog titled Taking the Lane and posted by just a woman who calls herself Ellie. It's from July 31st, and it talks about bike washing. So what is bike washing? The word conjures up an image of a bucket of sudsy water, sponges, and people raising money by washing bicycles. It's a valid use of the term, but there's a better one. It's also the two-wheeled equivalent of greenwashing, the practice of marketing a product or company by using environmentally friendly images, despite that product or company's near lack of actual environmental friendliness. Grocery store products packaged in brown and green colors and labeled natural is one kind of example. Oil companies touting their environmental responsibility is another. The Lorax selling cars is another. Get the drift?
Mm-hmm.
As bicycling becomes more popular, there's been a shift in the bike imagery used in advertising. Sure, there are still ads suggesting that you're a loser if you ride a bike, but there are a growing number using bikes to convey a sense that the company cares about the values of active transportation, health, and localism. An ad campaign that ran in my, meaning her, local daily last year is one example. She said she could not find the images, but the ads depicted a smiling woman riding a hybrid bike down a neighborhood street and text describing the company's care for its employees' health and well-being. Never mind that this company's stores are the ultimate driving destination. It depends for its existence on the spread of the most hellishly bicycle-unfriendly built environments imaginable, through which its goods are transported by trucks and with which its customers and employees must traverse. By centralizing shopping outside of residential centers and turning grocery getting into a bulk endeavor, companies like this one certainly have played a direct role in the blighting of suburban neighborhoods. And it just goes on to explain how, you know, you see bicycles being used sort of ubiquitously in all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, bike washing. Isn't that a cool comment?
Yeah, I noticed a bicycle in a television commercial just this week. Couldn't tell you what the product was, though, so I guess
it must not
have been very effective.
And see, that's the other thing. It's like we see bikes in commercials all the time, and we're going, hey, wait, look at those people riding a bike. What was the, you know, I don't know. The best commercials in the world are really the ones where you kind of remember the product according to marketing, but not for me. I don't know. I love some of these commercials, but I couldn't begin to tell you what they are.
Yeah.
And that's all the news I got today.
All right, let's move along
okay. And
hear what Mr. Bike Lawyer has to say.
Yes, and Steve has been with us before. We're going to welcome him again. Steve Magus, welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Oh, it's great to be back here, Diane. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, how's my hometown?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Cincinnati's in bloom, I'll tell you.
Yeah, especially this year.
Yeah, the singing, the baseball, we've got a lot going on right now.
That's great. Well, let's talk about something that's not so much fun. How's your research going on your bicycle crashes and your bicycle fatality? I know you've been doing this research for a while.
It's going well. We have, I think we have all the reports for 2010. And just to summarize, what I'm trying to do is not just look at the numbers, which everybody kind of does, but I'm trying to find out who these people were that were killed on their bicycles, where they happened, go to the law enforcement organization, get the copy of the public records, which is the police report, all the photographs, the accident reconstruction, the witness statements, and then I try to search the media for media stories, and then if there was a criminal case that arose out of the fatality, I try to figure that out and then track those cases to the extent we can. I mean, it's a bigger project than I realize. There's something like 900 police departments and law enforcement agencies in the state, and it's not always obvious which one investigated. If you're in, you know, Cuyahoga County or Cincinnati area, I think we have 48 different jurisdictions here.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a huge project. So this is really an Ohio project, but how do you think that stacks up against the rest of the country? I mean, are you seeing anything there?
Yeah, I think eventually it will. It's a small sample. That's why I took on this, because Ohio averages around 15 fatalities a year, and I thought that's a manageable number. You know, I can get 15 accident reports, look at them in detail, and, you know, do something with that. And Ohio is in, statistically, there's the big three. That's, you know, California, Texas, and Florida is number one every year. And those have, I think, something like 60% of all the fatalities are in one of those three states. And when you add them together there. So if you don't ride in those three states, your chances of being killed on the road just went down by 60%.
Wow. That's almost scary by itself.
Yeah, isn't that though? Isn't it? And Florida's nuts. We can spend a whole hour talking about Florida, but Ohio is in sort of the next tier of states in terms of numbers. I mean, New York is a little higher, South Carolina's a little higher, but we're in a package of states in that 10 to 20 range. that is a good sample size, I think, from a looking at things statistically. So what I've seen is we mirror national statistics in many ways. Nationally, you know, most of the people killed on bikes are men, and in Ohio, most of the people killed on bikes are men. Nationally, the average age is over 40. In Ohio in 2010, the average age was 42. Nationally, most of the people, 90% of the people killed today are adults, and same in Ohio. Out of 10, 11, 12 crashes, we'll have one or two kids under the age of, say, 16 or 18, the rest are adults. So in those ways, and you know, a lot of the crashes that are fatal in Ohio happen at night, same with the national statistics. Nighttime riding presents a lot of hazards, even for people that are well lit. But many of the people that go out at night and get hit and killed are not lit at all or are very poorly lit. So that's a problem.
So are you seeing that the statistics for 2012 are matching up, or are you seeing any trending?
2012, from what I can tell, and the way I track these is, I mean, the state publishes statistics, and then I've got some folks at the Ohio Department of Public Safety who have been generous enough to provide me with, you know, 250-page reports for the year. But it takes, I mean, I haven't gotten the final 2011 report yet, I don't think. So from that report, I can scan through and try to find all the fatals out of the 2,000 crashes, and then that helps me get data. But what I do every day, I have Google searches set up to try to capture any story that comes out about fatal bike crashes in Ohio, and then people send me these things too. So far in 2012, there have been six of them, which, I mean, I guess that's pretty good for the end of July, frankly. But it's been weird. I mean, there's the very first one was in February. It was a kind of a typical rear ender. And then in March, a lady ran a stop sign on State Route 104 and got hit in Ross County. And then there was a guy, Giuseppe, I think it's Mino or Mano.
Yes.
He's in Mansfield, Ohio. He was a very experienced rider from Italy who was here working. And he ran into a concrete bollard, one of these, you know, concrete poles that's in the, or steel pole that's in the middle of a bike trail.
Yeah, we reported on that. They removed that pole.
Good. Well, I grew up in Mansfield, and I was all over the kind of the newspaper site being somewhat critical of the fact that was there where it was, because it was a bad location. There's no need for it there. And people were saying, well, gee, can't you just ride around it? You know, and it's like a punch press. The reason they have guards on a punch press is because every idiot knows you don't put your hand in a punch press.
Right.
But if you're doing that constantly, bang, 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 you're going to screw it up. It's just, you know, the odds of it, of getting your hand in there if there are no guards are 1-to-1 eventually. So the same with this. And apparently from what people have told me, this was a well-struck bollard. It was not in pristine condition. You know, it's been struck a lot, so I'm glad they got rid of that. But
really?
Then there was a lady in Ottawa County who was drunk on her bike and apparently fell over in front of a pickup truck in a trailer park and got hit, killed. There was a fellow in North Royalton, Ohio. They still don't know what happened.
Right.
I don't know if he got hit or he fell down or what. A friend of mine lives near there. He's been keeping his eyes and ears open. We haven't heard anything. And then just last Sunday, there was a lady who was killed in Columbus at night. We don't have the details on that, but the media reports indicate that they suspect the drunk driver, but you know, we're still waiting to hear the details on that one.
So of all of these people, it seems like in several cases, the cyclist was at fault.
Yeah, I'd say it's split maybe a little better than 50-50 for the cyclist being at fault on the fatal crashes. When you look at the bike crash population, where, you know, just crashes where there's no fatality, it's closer to 50-50. But in the fatals, it seems like it's running a little more cyclist error than motorist error.
Is that normal? Well, I shouldn't say normal. I mean, what's normal about any of this? But is that statistically usual going back in history?
You know, that's a good question, and part of the reason I'm the main reason I'm doing this study at all is to look at these in detail and see if I agree with the conclusions.
Okay.
And in several cases, I have question marks by the liability because I don't. They blame it on. These are cases where the cyclist is blamed, and you know, and I'm not so certain that I would buy that. Or at least there's some combination of fault that isn't listed. You know, for example, in 2010, a very experienced rider is riding a trail. He comes to an intersection. The motorist says the guy doesn't stop at the intersection, and he hits him. I've talked to people who knew the guy who said, yeah, he sort of had a habit of that. However, the motorist laid down something like 150 feet of skid marks, which is a big number.
Yeah, no kidding.
Road. And the statement of the motorist was, the cop asked him, well, what was going on in the car? And he said, well, my wife was in the back seat, and the dog was throwing up, and we were in a hurry to get to the campground. You know, and that's his statement to the police about what's going on. You know, and they said, you know, the cyclist's fault. And then they had the very detailed drawing showing the skid marks and all that. But the one thing they didn't have was where in relation to the crossing the skid marks started. So you can't tell from the drawing if the skid marks started 150 feet away or 5 feet away and then went for 150 feet, you know. Without that, you don't know when the guy hit the brakes and when, you know, how
right.
this thing played out. So I had some heartburn given his statement.
Yeah. Let me take a moment to remind our listeners we're speaking with Steve Magus, the bike lawyer down in Cincinnati. So what, when you finally do all of this statistical stuff, when are you going to actually make some sort of report out of all this?
Yeah, I'm to the point now where 2010, I've got pretty much everything I need. So what I was, I've done one or two blog postings on a couple of cases I'm debating about, because if I write it the way I want to, which is writing a lot of detail, it's going to be a big project, and it would be easier, because since I do have a real job, to do that in, you know, more manageable chunks than sitting down and writing a book that's going to come out in 2015 about
sure.
2010, you know. So I'm trying to do these, and I'll start releasing them. And some of the cases I know more about than others because I follow them in detail. Some of them, like there was one in 2010. It was the worst police report I've ever seen in any death case of any kind, for this fella in the Cleveland area. It was in September of 2010. It's a Hungarian guy. I'd probably butcher his name. He was riding on Rockside Road. Was hit by a car. There's a 3-page police report, no photographs, no witness statements, no statement from the driver. There's a sketch, quote unquote, of the scene, which has, it literally looks like a third grader drew a car and a bike on the roadway sketch, and that's it. And then they said the guy got in the way of the car and got hit and was killed, you know, and the case was closed. Yeah, and it's just unbelievable, because most of the time, part of the reason I did this study with the fatal crashes is because these reports are very detailed, and, you know, there's measurements, and there's pictures of everything, and they interview everybody, and they take statements, and if the car looks like it may have been faulty, you know, they'll measure the tread depth and check the brakes and, you know, check the lights and do all this stuff that the State Patrol can do. They'll have aerial photographs. And in this thing, there's 3 pages and no witness statement, no nothing, just nothing. And so, you know, I wrote a blurb about that case, you know, focusing on the bad report. So each of these cases kind of takes on a life of its own. And I try to remember that these are people, these aren't statistics, you know.
Right.
I mean, I represented Jeff Stevenson's family in his case, so I know that case intimately. This lady, Michelle Kozlowski, out of Columbus, was killed on the Pelotonia ride, and there was a lot written, and I wrote a lot about it, and a lot of people in Columbus know her, and it's, you know, these are more than, these are more than cases and more than numbers, and so I'm trying to write something that kind of keeps all of that in mind. So they'll come out slowly, I think, over time in a series of blog posts on the OhioBikeLawyer.com website.
So, Is anybody else doing this, any of the same or similar research anywhere else in the country?
There's a fellow in Arizona, Ed, and I think it's Beek or Beggy or something like that, but he's done some fairly detailed looking at Arizona, which is another state that has quite a number of fatalities. But I think that's it. I mean, most of the studies and most of the statistics you see are based on, we're going to assume that everything in the police report is true, and then we're going to take the numbers into a spreadsheet, and we're going to crunch them and do this and that, and we can tell you that that X percent of these crashes occurred at intersections. Well, then
right.
You say, well, what's the definition of an intersection? You know, because the number that is published for that, to me, seems fairly low, because most of the cases I see involve somebody crossing paths with somebody else. Whether it's a turn into a driveway or out of a driveway or on a road or a passing or something. And their definition of an intersection in that particular page is road to road. You know, so on one of the big roads near me, Beachmont Avenue, it's maybe a mile and a half from one road to the next. But there's 100 access points in between there, people crisscrossing and coming in and out. To me, each of those is kind of an intersection. So the numbers that we read are based on a lot of assumptions that the police reports got it all right, and they blame the right person, and they analyzed it correctly. And, you know, sometimes they do, usually they do, but there are definitely times when they do not. And that's what I'm trying to look at, as well as looking at sort of trends. If I see anything over time that you know, these same mistakes keep being made or whatever.
Well, unfortunately, your work is keeping you busy.
Well, this is true, yeah. The real job is keeping me busy, and this is too.
What else are you doing in your life? You riding?
Ride some. More trails and spinning. Trying to get my knees back in shape. And the Bike Lawyer brand bicycle gets out and about, though, so that's kind of fun.
That's great. Well, I'm glad we caught up. I'm not happy to hear that things aren't improving, that it's sort of, even if it's staying the same, I guess that's, I don't know, that's better than it getting worse.
I would say we are improving.
Really? Okay.
Because when you look at the numbers over the last, let's say, from 94 to 2010, so however many years that is, the average number of deaths in Ohio was 16 and a half per year during that time. However, in the last 3 years, in 11, 2010 we had 11, in 2011 we had 12, and this year so far we've only had 6. So we're, in 3 years running, we're well below the average, even though cycling is more popular than ever, there's more people riding than ever.
Well, that's
so
true.
In that regard, I would say, you know, we're doing better than in terms of keeping people safe. And then people will get hurt if they don't follow the rules, and I don't think everyone has a grasp of that. And you know, you need to protect yourself by following the rules, getting a good lane position, you know, making yourself conspicuous, getting the best lighting system you can afford if you're at night riding at night in the dark, and that kind of thing. So when people do those kind of things, you know, it lessens your odds, so to speak, of getting hit. There's an interesting statistic from the state, which I didn't realize that came out. They looked at all the bike crashes for 5 years, and there were 12,000 of them, so about 2,000 a year. And out of those 12,000, 6,000 of them, what do you think had in common?
They were riding at night without lights.
No, they were kids.
Oh.
Under the age of 18. So, again, I felt like my odds of getting hit by a car just got cut in half, you know, because these are
because
kids.
You're a little older than that.
And I'm an adult. That's true.
Yes. Yeah.
But I also figure that I haven't looked at those kid cases, but my suspicion would be that a high percentage of those kids did stupid stuff that put them in harm's way, and more so than adults. So that reinforces my thought that if you ride safely, ride predictably, you know, aggressively by being in the lane and being conspicuous, but, you know, your odds of getting hit are relatively low, and your odds of being involved in a fatal crash are very, very low. So
Well, that takes us to what's going to be my last point this evening, and that is education and getting kids educated much earlier about bicycling and then bringing parents into it, too. We want to see kids riding. We want to see kids back on their bikes and outside, but we want them to do it safely.
That's correct. And that training is lacking. It was lacking for us growing up. You know, and when I was a kid in the 70s, you know, you'd get on your bike at 9 in the morning in the summer, and you maybe came home for lunch, and, you know, you
that's
got
true.
Back for dinner, and you rode all over town. And that's, it, don't do that these days for a variety of reasons, I think. And, you know, I think we see that in a number of ways. We see that in increased obesity, and we see that in the fact that in 1975, you know, there were 1,003 people killed on bikes. 60% of them were under the age of 16.
Right.
So that means around 300 adults were killed today. 90% are over the age of 16. So there's more adults killed today than there were back in the 75. But you know, on the bright side, you know, there's very few kids being killed these days on bikes. So little kids, smaller kids. So the education, we still have, if we want to promote cycling for kids, which I think we ought to, you know, we got the safe routes to schools and we have other things going on to promote that sort of thing. Training needs to be huge in terms of teaching kids how to ride. You know, you don't ride against traffic. You know, you are traffic, and that lesson has to be hammered into people's heads very early. It'll make them better drivers, too.
Or maybe they'll just say, I think I'm going to stay with bicycles and public transportation. That would be kind of nice, too. I would like that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's always good to talk with you. I never get back down to Cincinnati, but maybe I will soon. I want to go hear my friend Stan Hertzman with his silk and suede at Hyde Park I can't remember the name of the coffee shop, but I'd love to come down and hear him play Awakenings.
Yeah, Awakenings. I'm on his mailing list.
I grew up with Stan. His mom and my mom were really, really good friends, so I would love to see him. Thanks so much for being with us on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right.
To come back anytime.
Have a great night.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Steve Magus joined us from downstate Cincinnati, Ohio.
My hometown.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to hear that as I age, my odds of being injured or killed in a cycling accident go down.
Well,
so, you know.
You know, sometimes it works in your favor. Well, obviously.
It's like infant mortality. If you survive those first 5 years, right.
You have a better chance of surviving.
You got a pretty good shot.
Yeah,
you know?
Right,
If you survive kidhood on your bike, then,
chances are you'll get to adulthood on your bike.
You might even get to old agehood and still be riding. So.
And be in the hood whatever.
We can hope.
We can hope.
We can hope that we'll be back next week with more Outspoken Cyclist.
Yes.
And I'm confident that we will.
We will. And I have one little tidbit, and that is on our August 25th show, it will be our 100th show.
Wow.
Yeah. Who would have thunk it? 100 shows. How scary is that?
Time flies.
When you're having this much fun.
That's
right. Exactly.
Right.
All righty.
You know, suffering comes from desire.
Let it go.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.